Welcome to The Late Disciple, a ministry of Truth Seekers Fellowship. Yesterday we learned that it was not until the 19th century that the majority of Jews believed that Isaiah 53 referred to Israel and not the Messiah. That teaching has blinded Jews from the truth. And today, Tom Murray will answer the questions, why did the Messiah have to die, and how did God provide redemption for man? Keep listening.
Well, welcome back to our broadcast. In our last session, I told you that to interpret Isaiah 53 as speaking of the Messiah is not a non-Jewish point of view. In fact, what we have shown you is that if we were to truly speak of the traditional Jewish interpretation of Isaiah 53, it would have to be that the passage speaks of the Messiah and not the nation of Israel. The first one, as I told you, to ever expound the view that this passage in Isaiah referred to Israel rather than the Messiah was Shlomo Yitzchaki, better known, as I told you, as Rashi, and he introduced that concept between the years of 1040 and 1105 A.D. So for the first 1,000 years even after Christ and during the entire Old Testament rabbinical teaching period, it was always the traditional Jewish interpretation that Isaiah 53 referred to the Messiah. Now, I told you that Rashi was then followed by a man named David Kimchi. He comes on the scene in the year 1160 and lasts until year 1235. But their teachings, both Rashi and Kimchi, go contrary to all the rabbinic teachings of not only their day, but of the preceding 1,000 years of the New Testament period as well as the Old Testament. So today, in modern Judaism, Rashi's view has become the majority or the dominant view in Jewish and rabbinic theology. But in fact, Rashi's view is not the Jewish view, nor is Rashi's view the traditional Jewish view. Those closest to the time of the original writings of the Old Testament and those who had less contact with the Christian or the Messianic Jewish apologists interpreted Isaiah 53 as well as the other passages speaking of the Messiah as referring to the person of the Messiah, not to the nation of Israel. Now, the whole concept of a dying Messiah is foreign today to modern Judaism. And that's why we want to answer the question in this broadcast and begin as to why did the Messiah have to die? Now, the idea that the Messiah would have to die was a part of Judaism in the past, as I've told you, in the historical interpretation. But the question still stands, why did the Messiah have to die? Well, as we answer this question, we're going to have a second question arise. And what is God's means of redemption? If there is one theme that seems to go throughout the entire scriptures, all 39 books of the Hebrew Old Testament, as well as the 27 books of the New Testament, it is the theme that redemption comes by means of the shedding of blood. So let's drop back into the Hebrew Scriptures or the Old Testament and let's see. You see, redemption became necessary when sin entered the human sphere and separated man from God, his Creator. When Adam and Eve committed the first act of disobedience, sin entered and sin separated them from God. And from that point on, the means of bridging the separation of man from God was by means of blood. Now, this bridging of the gap is what we call redemption. In the history of God's dealing with mankind, and particularly with his people Israel, the means of redemption was always by blood. Now, the redemptive element of blood begins to come into the theme of Scripture at the same time that sin becomes relevant in Scripture. For until sin came, no blood was necessary to be shed. Now we read that just as soon as man is expelled from the Garden of Eden, in Genesis 3:21 it says that Jehovah God made for Adam and for his wife coats of skin and clothed them. Now the skins that God used to clothe their physical nakedness were animal skins. And the nakedness that the element of sin had now revealed had to be covered. But the covering required the death of several animals. And so for the first time in human history, blood was shed. Now this provides the root meaning of the Hebrew word for atonement, and that word simply means a covering. So the necessity of blood was a lesson that was soon learned by the sons of the first human couple, Adam and Eve. The time came for both Abel and Cain, the first two children from Adam and Eve's union, to bring their own personal sacrifices before God. Cain offered for sacrifice the fruit of his labors in the field. The offering was vegetable, and it was bloodless. Abel, on the other hand, brought a blood offering taken from his flock. When God passed judgment on the two types of offerings, that of Cain, which was vegetable and bloodless, was rejected, and that of Abel, which was animal and blood, passed. Abel was accepted, Cain was not. So the lesson was taught. One cannot approach God by whatever means he or she chooses to approach God. It is man who sinned. And it is man who offended the holy God. But it is God who must do the forgiving. Therefore, it's not for man to choose the means of forgiveness, but it's God's choice. And God has chosen the means to be through blood. Now, Cain had chosen to approach God in his own way. But he was rejected. Abel chose the way God had demanded, and he and his offering was accepted. As biblical history develops in the book of Genesis, we find that all those with whom God was pleased came to him by means of blood. Noah immediately offered up blood sacrifices when he left the ark following the flood. He was followed by other great men in Jewish history, men like Abraham and Isaac and Jacob, all of whom were careful to approach God by means of blood. When Moses received the law at Mount Sinai, the redemptive element of blood ran through the entire law, including its 613 commandments. There's a great summary statement for the entire law which Moses received, which is found in the third book that Moses wrote, the book of Leviticus, in chapter 17, verse 11. For the life of the flesh is in the blood, and I have given it, the blood, to you upon the altar to make atonement for your souls. For it is the blood that maketh atonement by reason of the life. It can easily be said that all of the law revolves around this one statement in Leviticus. There are commandments which God gave in the law that were to be obeyed. Disobedience was considered sin or lawlessness. If disobedience did take place, the means of atonement or covering that sin was the offering of blood. Now, the book of Leviticus opens by giving great detail to the different types of blood sacrifices. All these different sacrifices had the same purpose, however, so that the Jew might be rightly related again to God. All seven of the feasts of Israel each year, Passover, unleavened bread, first fruits, Pentecost, trumpets, the Day of Atonement, and tabernacles, all required the shedding of blood. The Yom Kippur ceremony was greatly detailed in chapter 16 of Leviticus, and careful instructions were given for the shedding of blood to atone for the sins of the Jewish nation. The tabernacle and the temple both were built to expedite and to make efficient the required shedding of blood for the atonement of the people's sins. The Holy of Holies in the temple building itself, which contained for so many years the Shekinah glory, or God's visible manifestation of His presence, could only be entered, the Holy of Holies, once a year by only one man, the Jewish high priest. And in order for him to enter the Holy of Holies, he had to have the blood of the Yom Kippur sacrifice with him. And this blood had to be sprinkled on the Ark of the Covenant within the Holy of Holies behind the veil. And that Ark of the Covenant contained the two tablets of the law. Now, we're out of time in this broadcast, but in our next broadcast, I want to read to you from Leviticus 16 exactly how the high priest was to enter the Holy of Holies on the Day of Atonement. I hope you'll come back in that study and learn more about why Messiah had to die.
Thank you, Tom, and thank you, friend, for listening. I'd like to encourage you to visit our brand new website at www.milktomeat.org. While there, you can sign up for our free newsletter, hear the radio programs, and correspond with us through email. Again, the address is www.milktomeat.org. And if you have any questions or want to order a tape of the program, call us at 901-685-3385. Outside Memphis, call toll-free 866-685-3385. And we'll see you tomorrow right here for The Lay Disciple.